Hello, this is the Private Investigator Experience Podcast, and I'm your host, Phil Little. Thank you for joining me today. If this is your first time with me, I own West Coast Detectives International, a 102-year-old global security firm. I work my cases through the lens of my military, law enforcement, intelligence service, and global security background. Then I add just a touch of my biblical worldview to come up with solutions for our clients. I've had many questions about how I went from being a local PI to working all over the world. Most PIs just work in their local area. There was a combination of things that happened that created my interest in what was going on around the world. It originally started with my work in law enforcement when I became interested and involved in intelligence gathering and saw the benefit of it. And then that was fueled more by my first trip into southern Lebanon in 1977 from northern Israel. And I saw what was going on in Lebanon by the terrorists and became interested in what was behind it. When I learned from materials that had been taken from the terrorist training camps in southern Lebanon, that people from all over the world had been trained in these camps, then sent back to their home country. And then that raised a question about the purpose of these camps. For all you heard in the media and around the public consumption was that the PLO, the Palestine Liberation Organization, was wanting a homeland for the Palestinian people in the Middle East. Well, if that was the case, why train terrorists from all over the world, including the U.S., and then send them home? What was the purpose of that? This didn't smell right. And I decided I wanted to learn and find out what the truth really was. It didn't take a lot of investigation to learn that there was an international intent on the overall terrorist objective. That plan included overthrowing the Western way of life, democracies, moving to totalitarian type governments, or in the minds of the Islamist extremists, it would be Sharia law. That was a moment in my career that I decided to find out all I could about world terrorism, its goals, and its methods. That included what was going on in Europe, the Middle East, with the Islamic terrorism extremists. Wherever it came from, I wanted to find out what was behind it. I quickly discovered if I was to accomplish that goal, I needed experts and investigators on the ground around the world. Over the next few years, I established stations around the world staffed with law enforcement and counterterrorism and military officials from these countries. One of the highlights of that journey was when I was part of a 50-member law enforcement officials from local, state, and federal agencies who went on a 3-week trip to Europe prior to the 1984 Olympics, and this was in 1982, and it was called the Interpol Connection. The purpose of that trip was to find out what we could do to prevent terrorism or violence from happening at the 1984 Olympics, to learn from the Europeans' experience, and particularly what happened in Munich, Germany in 1972. We started in England, over to France, into Interpol, Germany, GSG-9, and down to Italy. And it was on this trip that I met and recruited some future team members for our European and Middle East operations. In 1986, I held my first 3-day seminar in Los Angeles, bringing working law enforcement professionals, the guys working the ground, not the brass, to brief their American counterparts that was working on the ground in the U.S., about the rising terrorist threat that was coming from the Middle East and Europe that had yet to hit the United States. We had about 250 participants, mostly from law enforcement, had 11 members of the Joint Terrorism Task Force in Los Angeles, and then there were some selected private security personnel who were cleared. No press allowed, and we had a secured entry. From this conference, I was able to connect working agents on the ground in the U.S. to agents in Europe so they could make a phone call, run a name past or a situation past them to find out if they could get information on a suspect or about how to work a possible situation, particularly around bomb threats and those type of situations. If they went through the international channels, it could take days or weeks to get response. Then, if there was something there, they could always go through the channels to get their warrants or whatever they needed to do. I continued on these efforts for many years. Along the way, my reputation grew not only with the international private sector, but also with government agencies. I would, from time to time, get a call to see if I could help the public sector with a problem where my footprint out around the world had people on the ground. Another important tool that was developed for our international work was developed in 1989 by the State Department. They set up a section, it was OSAC, Overseas Security Advisory Council. That was to help connect private sector professionals to embassy in countries around the world. This was extremely helpful, particularly when you hadn't been to that country. Then they created databases and conferences and meetings and with information that would help about current ground conditions in the country before you travel. I joined that group and it was helpful over the years in navigating countries you did not have contact with. I gave all this background to get to today's case, the missing 1,500 passports and how I got involved in it. By the late 90s, I had stations around the world, along with some fixed offices, and one was in Geneva, Switzerland, with a satellite office in Zurich. This was for our European and Middle East client base. So many of the Middle Eastern business people, executives, country officials had homes or businesses in Geneva, and they would spend a lot of time there. So that was a good place to meet your Middle East clients in Geneva. Now, Geneva was one of my favorite cities. Even though it wasn't a fast-paced action place like Paris, it was more laid back. Had a touch of elegance, the old world flavor of the city. Lake Geneva was beautiful, and the town rose on rows of streets, circling the hills above the lake. And you could spend days and weeks exploring all the little alleys and shops and restaurants. That was never ending. One of my favorite daytime pastimes was to retreat from the pressures of the international intrigue to a church across the street from my office, which was from the 1700s. Walking into the silence of this majestic church was a silence screaming out at you with the presence of God. And that presence filled my body, brought a calming presence over me, and it was just a great solitude to rewind. It was after one of my afternoon trips to the church. I was back in my office. I heard the sound of my encrypted KL7 phone chirping at me from my bag on the side of my desk. The chirp told me that this was Dixon, a high-level government agent, and he only called me when he was out of options. When I picked up the phone, and after a short, "How are you?" he said, "Where are you? And how fast can you be in Vienna?" I said, "I'm fine. I'm at the office in Geneva." And I said, "This is December. It will be cold in Vienna. What's up?" He said, "Start packing. I've been working on this all day, and the official channels are taking too long. I have a feeling about this one. And it's not the feeling you get when you hear your rich uncle died. I need some back channel work fast." A little background on Dixon. He was a highly positioned operator and White House access who didn't spook easily. He had seen it all, done it all. So I listened carefully. Dixon said, 20 hours ago, we got a call from MI5 at Heathrow. The Brits had grabbed a Saudi national on a routine passport check. He's booked for New York. And he flashed a passport from a Southwest European country, name withheld for security reasons. The only problem is the number didn't show up on the Interpol issue list. They contacted the country and discovered that 4 months ago, 1,500 issue-ready passports were stolen from the country embassy in Vienna. They hadn't gotten around to reporting it yet to Interpol. They couldn't come up with a passport number for sure. And the list that they gave to the Brits didn't have the number of the stolen passport that they found at Heathrow. The Brits put the Saudi through the ringer. They finally broke him. He was just a mule, a test case to try the passports. Somebody had given him a week's vacation in New York to see if the passport got flagged. They just forgot to tell the mule that he might be in some trouble, which meant they were planning on using more of them, but what for? If he's telling the truth, then whoever sent him is watching the circus Heathrow and working on plan B, for they know that who has been hacked. If he's not telling the truth, no matter how many of these passports might have been used by other terrorists and entered the United States or other countries. Dixon went on to say he was flattering and abusing officials all over Europe, but nobody's in any particular hurry, he said. I said, you have a feeling? A positive yep come back. I said, did you tell them that? Dixon chuckled and said, I forgot to tell them. You can let them know when you get there tomorrow. I reminded Dixon of our plan to meet with the families in Vail after the holidays for a ski trip. And passports or no passports, you aren't getting out of me seeing you roll down the slope out of control. He laughed and we hung up. After I hung up with Dixon, I set my flight the next morning. And then I called Alexa, my trusted go-to person on the ground in Vienna. Having police and government contacts is great, but better than that, at times, is a beautiful Russian woman whose father had been a high-level banker in Russia. It's not his banking contacts that I like, but he knows every legal and illegal thing going on in Vienna, and he has a deep knowledge of all things East European. If those missing passports had any East European connection, and if he knew it, his daughter would know it too. I set up to meet Alexa at Philip Miller's restaurant, a favorite place for her, that would start our conversation off on the right foot. The next call I made was to Mario, who is director of Stasa Polizia, Secret Service branch of the Austrian Federal Police. Mario was responsible for counterterrorism and counterintelligence, and we had met over dinner with some friends a few months ago, and we'd exchanged cards, and he said, well, if you ever need anything in Austria, let me know. Well, now I'm going to see if that was true or not. It took a few seconds after he answered the phone to remember who I was, so I told him why I called. He already knew about the case and wasn't getting much traction from the country embassy, which made him think it was an inside job. We arranged to meet at my hotel the next evening after I'd got to Vienna, and he would have all the facts they knew and with copies of anything that might be pertinent for me. The next day, Alexa dropped into the seat opposite me at her favorite outside table and shot a look at me over her sunglasses before she pulled them up. Do you know what time it is? I responded, you agreed yesterday. She said that was before my late night, or should I say my late morning at the club? Coffee, I asked. She sarcastically said, you have to ask. I signaled the waiter. Sorry to disturb your beauty rest, Lex, but I'm on a schedule today and dinner is booked. I asked her about her dear father, Dmitry, and hoped he was in good health, at least for a few days yet. She responded positively and said she would give him my regards. After she'd had her first drink of coffee and her eyes were looking a bit open, I asked, what have you heard about the stolen passports from the country embassy last September? Alexa slumped back in her chair and said, that's all news, dear. I thought you were going to ask me about the nukes. The nukes? I said with heightened interest. You haven't heard about the nukes? You're getting rusty, Phil. Need to get out more. I responded, but from the looks of things, you need to get out less. You're what, 23? A quick 22 came back. You need to pace yourself. I need you around for a while yet. Right now, it's the passports. Well, if they connect to any nukes, then we will talk. You say, an inside job? Yes. Everyone knows the clerk at the embassy has a weakness for old wines and young men. Not sure if it was blackmail or a payoff. Probably both. Doesn't matter. Who's the clerk? Marcelino somebody. Short, fat, bad dancer. As our lunch ended, I slipped her the envelope with the stack of green bills to keep her interest high and to have her get her dad to get all he could on the missing passports. And now we're going to take a break, as I don't want to make this one too long. And I'm going to do another post next week that will tell the conclusion of what happened to the 1,500 passports and were there any nukes involved. You can help us a lot if you would like, share, subscribe, and you know the drill, hit that notification bell so you will know when this next post comes out to the conclusion of this case. If you have any comments, questions, thoughts about what's going on in the world, or ideas of how you work a case like this, or techniques that we might have used, feel free to leave comments on any of the platforms, or you can email me at plittlepi777@gmail.com. And if you might have a situation in your life or family, or know someone that might, that would be wondering, could a private investigator help me with this issue I have? Send me that information, and I will get back to you and let you know if a private investigator could help and how it might work. That email again is plittlepi777@gmail.com. Thank you for listening and watching, and I can't wait to share the conclusion of this exciting international intrigue that kept us going for several months. So until next time, be safe. May God bless you, your family, and may God bless America.